Post-Harlan Monologics. Number 00013. Recorded on October 14, 2022. Production location, Post. Harlan. Texas. Chapter 13. Unions, Eugenes, and Eugenics. Unions, Eugenes, and Eugenics. Chapter 13.
The opinions of Maverick 88 are not necessarily the opinions of Maverick 88. Sensitive content warning. Viewer discretion is advised.
Now, buckle up. You are on the runaway train of thought. Ladies and gentlemen, without any further ado, the one, the only, Maverick 88.
I was a little youngin', one of the Friday night treats my father would subject the family to was an outing to a place called Gino's Hamburgers. Gino's Hamburgers is on Route 22, and I might say westbound, I might say eastbound. It was both bound. Anybody knows Union, New Jersey knows that on Route 22, there's a commercial median. Is that even an expression? There's a median in the way that is large enough to contain commercial operations, and it makes that stretch of highway, Union, New Jersey into Springfield, New Jersey, completely fucking insane. You gotta have eyes on all sides of your head to get through there without a collision. And it may be worse now than it was back then. Actually, when I was a kid, the speed limit was, I think, 55 through there. And as I got older, they knocked it down to like 45. But anyway, Gino's Hamburgers, right? I don't know what's there now. I probably should have looked on the map. If you were heading westbound through Union into Springfield, right across from where the old Trader Horn was, next to that was a little patch of woods, and you crossed into Springfield after that. There was Pizza Town USA on the left. My mother's uncle worked in a carpet shop right there in that area on the right-hand side. And as you went further down, there was a Lido Diner right at the end of the median section. You turn right after that, you come back and do it again. My father worked in the area right off of Route 22 down there in Springfield. Off the eastbound side, he worked for an electronics company way back in the early 70s, late 60s, early 70s, when I was a little guy. So that was kind of his beaten path, and it would be mine too. Route 22, I spent most of my life along. I'm a Texan now, and I have been for a while, but up until the age of 40, I was primarily actually 37. I was a Jersey guy. I was a Jersey guy, and I lived all along Route 22. Born in Newark, and I graduated high school in Bridgewater, New Jersey. We lived in a village called Martinsville, and we lived in a couple of stops along the way, from Newark to Hillside, from Hillside to Greenbrook, Greenbrook to Martinsville. And then as I became an adult, I lived in various places around Bridgewater. Took one little hiatus trying to escape from a... How do you say? an overly interested ex-girlfriend. I went up to Hackettstown, New Jersey, way up in the northwest corner, up in the mountain and lake country, right on Main Street, Route 46 through Hackettstown, down the road from the M&M factory. Yes, the M&M candy factory. You could smell them cooking the chocolate up. And I lived up there for, well, I rented for a year, but I lived in it for about a half a year. And I moved back to Route 22 on the Greenbrook as an adult, and I was in Bound Brook as an adult, and then I was back in Bridgewater, Somerville area for a while. So I'm up, the whole point is I'm up along Route 22. My father was along Route 22 until he finally escaped upstate New York. And well, it's a whole family thing, Route 22. And about halfway down the way was this Gino's Hamburgers joint, right? Gino's Hamburgers. Now, it wasn't just Gino's. It was also a Kentucky Fried Chicken. They had some kind of partnership arrangement going on in New Jersey, and I don't know how many. It was in the Mid-Atlantic area. What I know about Gino's is very little. Started out of Baltimore. It was a result of some of the football players on the Baltimore Colts in the 1950s doing their little off-season sideline. A lot of prominent athletes did that back in the day. You know, they play out their seasons as an athlete, and then they would partner up and make investments into sideline businesses just to keep the money, you know, taking advantage of their name. I remember, what was it, as a Jersey guy, right? Phil Rizzuto and Yogi Berra, I think, they opened up a bowling alley up in Newark or somewhere around Newark for a while back in the 50s. I don't remember what it was called. I don't. But that's one example. You know, I think one of them opened up a like a tailor shop. Joe DiMaggio opened up a restaurant, an Italian restaurant somewhere. Which athletes had to do back then. Now they don't have to do that, but I'm sure the money that they're making, they're investing into all kinds of stuff. And but back then it was, you know, the more famous athletes could sell their name, pinning it onto some kind of local establishment. And well, this happened with a couple of Baltimore Colts football players, and it spread out of Baltimore up into the Mid-Atlantic, and it spread even up into New England, these this chain of Gino's Hamburgers. And it stayed in operation for a good 20 years, and I understand it's picked up again now recently in this new millennium, and I don't know if it's still going or not, or I don't even know where. I'm not a historian on this shit, but I just remember it was a place that we would go. My father would take us out on most Friday nights, and it was like the special family treat. And it was always somewhere really inexpensive because we were poor, right? Working poor, but poor, just like I am now. I'm a working poor. My wife is working poor. Together, we managed to live something just shy of an American dream, you know, just shy. But yeah, Gino's Burgers and like fast food. Your kids, you love the shit, right? It doesn't matter. It's fast food. It's like you see the neon lights, and you think it's just made for you. And I guess in a way it is, but I don't know. Fast food, is it made for kids? Maybe once upon a time, you know, you think about like the drive-in burger joints, like you know, Arnold's on Happy Days, right? And we had them in New Jersey. Stewart's Root Beer was one. And down south in Tennessee, they still have a couple of A&W root beer drive-in places. There was other stuff in New Jersey too, disappeared over time. I remember I lived in Somerset for a while I was a married man, as a young man, and we had a Stewart's Root Beer right up the street on Route 27. Anyway, not to get too off that track. Yeah, fast food. Was it for kids? You know, it's kind of cheap food, quick food. You're on a date, you're just hanging out, and you go up. You drive in, you park. In the old days, they'd come out to you. We got the Sonics now, right? And they come out with the roller skates. That's how it was back then. They roller skate out. I don't know if they do that shit here. But Sonic is like the drive-in. And I've been down south since the year of 2005, There were Sonics in the town where I lived. When I first got down south, I was in Canton, Georgia, Cherokee County, right? We had a Sonic in that town. I believe there was one in Union, New Jersey, or there may be one now since then. Right around where Pizza Town USA used to be. Or something. Maybe it's not Sonic, but it was something like that. But maybe. Maybe not. Maybe not. But down south, for sure. Canton, Georgia, for sure. They had a Sonic there. And to me, it's a southern thing. And I think I've eaten at Sonic two or three times in the past 15 years. It is 2002 right now, you know. I did not really care for it. I don't eat fast food. I just don't do it, you know. Since then, yeah, I did it off and on. But in the past, like, 5-6 years, I don't touch a shit. I absolutely do not. I believe when I first came back to Texas, just as, like, a tip of the cap to Texas, I went to Whataburger. And that may be the last fast food that I've had. I don't recall having any. But is it for kids? I think originally it was designed for young people. The whole Happy Days scene at Arnold's, right? Now, it's literally convenience food for everybody. I drive out in my neighborhood and get down the road. I get on the highway. And just before I get on the highway, there's a McDonald's on the left. McDonald's on the left. And it's not kids who are walking there on their way to school. It's a bunch of adults who are on their way to work or wherever they're going. You know, it's breakfast time, for crying out loud. They got lines down the street, lines wrapped around the building. What kind of fucking methamphetamine are they putting in that food? I won't touch it. I wouldn't eat it with your mouth, you know? But there it goes. Billions and billions served. That was a long time ago. I don't get it. I don't know what the fascination is. When I was a little kid, there was a fascination because it was the bright lights and the toys and the sugar and, you know, it was made for kids. But, yeah, just when I walk out here on my lunch break, on the way in, a supervisor and another coworker, two separate vehicles, two separate instances, just on my way out the door to the parking lot, one coming in with a sack full of, two sackfuls of McDonald's, and the other one coming in with a sack of DQ, Dairy Queen. We got a Dairy Queen down around the road here. And yes, they are both morbidly obese people. Go figure. You know, for some, the rewards are many. For some, the rewards are few. Anyhow, moving along from that. Geno's, Route 22, Union, New Jersey. I don't know if it got torn down and replaced by the IHOP, that I don't even know if it's still there. The first International House of Pancakes that I ever knew of and went to was right there. Either where Geno's / Kentucky Fried Chicken was, or like next door to it behind it. It's an either or thing. But the original IHOP in Union, New Jersey, and really anywhere around that part of the world, was right there in that same strip, that same deadly strip of Route 22, right where Union goes into Springfield. Yeah. Union, New Jersey. Union, New Jersey. You know what else happens in Union, New Jersey? You got to look carefully or you miss it. But Aqua Teen Hunger Force, that very peculiar, stoned out, drugged out adult cartoon. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you just have to look it up. How do you describe it? Well, we're talking about fast food. The character's a milkshake, a container of French fries, and a wad of meat. Right? Those are your main characters, plus their neighbor across the street. Some very peculiar dude named Carl Bratanalan Deluski or something like that, right? Big fat guy, bald, wear flip-flops and sweats all over. Funniest guy on the show. He makes the show worth watching, but it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous, stoned out, you know, marijuana, fast food, freshman in college humor. And it was produced. It may still be in production for all I know. I haven't watched. I had the first, what was it, three seasons on DVD long, long time ago, the year 2004. I started getting into it. I had a pack of more youthful friends in my circuit who kind of turned me on to it. And I thought it was a riot at the time. I still have one or two of the DVDs. I play it for my wife every here and there when we're bored. And she just kind of shakes her head. It doesn't appeal to her. And, you know, it really doesn't to me. I wore it out. There's some funny shit. You see it once or twice, it stops being funny, you know. Like, I remember there was a movie called Airplane way back, I think it was in late 70s, right? You've heard of it, Airplane. Christ, everybody heard of Airplane. I saw it, where did I see it? Blue Star Cinema, right? Watchung, New Jersey, on where? Route 22, right? Because everything is on fucking Route 22 out that away. I saw that movie in the theater, and it was the funniest thing I ever saw in my life. I mean, I was hiccuping. I was bowled over. I was rolling on the floor. Me and my friend, we were just cracking up everything. It was just like just machine gun humor. Just one thing to the next, to the next, to the next. Funniest thing, right? As well, I was probably in the fifth grade. I don't know, fourth, fifth, sixth grade, somewhere like that. I don't know exactly what year it came out, but when it came out, I saw it in the theater. It was an afternoon. A couple of friends from my neighborhood were with me. It was like the adults just dropped us off and said, go watch the movie. Son of a bitch, that thing was funny. And then I saw it again, I don't know, a year or two later, and it wasn't funny anymore. It had that initial appeal, and then it just lost it. And I feel kind of the same way about Aqua Teen Hunger Force. And what you're talking about, sophomoric humor. It only goes so far. You know, it's worth a round. You know, now adult humor. Think of like Ron White, the comedian. You know, one of those the redneck comedy tour dudes. He's a Texan originally. Ron White. I've seen him. I've seen him live at the Majestic Theater in Dallas when I was a little fancier than I am now, some years back. And I've seen any video he put out, you know, anything available on YouTube to watch. And I've seen his routines multiple times, and I still laugh at everything. That does not get old to me. It's more adult in nature. It's more sophisticated. But the juvenile stuff loses its luster. But yeah, Aqua Teen Hunger Force, though it was produced in Atlanta, Georgia, not far from Canton, right? Just down 575 to 75, 20-minute ride. It actually takes place in Union, New Jersey. God only knows why. And the backdrop don't look like Union. It don't. Union is a very developed, a very well-established old suburban town. A lot of its commercial areas harken back to the 60s. The buildings, the architecture, you know. In fact, where I live now, my city's like that. It's a 50s and 60s town, you know, right outside of Dallas. And you go into the downtown area and you see a lot of that same kind of architecture. Even though, you know, Texas is a world away from New Jersey, it's just shit was done that way in that time. And it's hard for me to describe, but I know it when I see it. You know, small, light industrial buildings just had a certain kind of look, like a yellow brick look, yellowish, low to the ground, certain kind of windows, certain kind of entryways. But yeah, it's not a city. But what happens in Aqua Teen Hunger Force, when they put a backdrop on it, they put like a Manhattan skyline. And it's not far. In fact, if you drove east from Union down 22, right where it turns into Hillside, New Jersey, where I grew up for half of my growing up, there's a hill that runs down in the hillside. We're at the top of the hill. You look out and you can see the Manhattan skyline right there. It's not far away. It might be 10 miles from there. So Union, you know, somewhere in the range of 10 to 15 miles tops from New York. So it's not ridiculous to think a Manhattan skyline in the backdrop, but there's very few places in Union where you would actually see that. And you know, as a New Jersey guy, you wouldn't think that you were looking at New Jersey there. But anyway, it is. It is. That's the address of the characters, Union, New Jersey. I talked about the Lido Diner, right? The Lido Diner on the Springfield edge of that Route 22 clusterfuck with all the commerce and the median. At the very end of it on the Springfield side, you had that Lido Diner. My grandmother worked there. I used to go visit her. You know, she worked there when I was older and I was driving, you know. And I would drop in. You know, me and my wife were dating. We would drop in and, you know, she would fawn and fuss over us and make our day because, you know, you get a little older, you grow up, you start making people's day, right? A little character starting to blossom in my early adulthood. But my grandmother lived in Union. And she worked at that Lido Diner, but before she worked at that Lido Diner, she worked at the Mark Twain Diner, which was down by the old Two Guys on Morris Avenue, south of 22, right off of 22. It's always Route 22. And she also worked more towards, what did they call? It was like a little downtown Union. Union Center, I think? Union Center. And there was a Peter Pan Diner. She worked there. My grandmother was a career waitress. And she took great pride in bringing us coconut custard pie and pumpkin pie for both Thanksgiving and Christmas every year. That was her thing. That was her contribution to what we were doing. She would bring them baked on the premises from whatever diner she was working at. Yeah, so Union, New Jersey. All that about Union, New Jersey. I never lived there, but I went to the Union County Boys Club there when I was a little guy. My mom's cousin, Joy, who we choose to call Joy. It's not really her name, but that's what the family called her. She worked there. Some kind of receptionist or secretary or something. She was significantly older than me. I think she was in her 20s, and me and my brother was, you know, like 6, 7, 8 years old, shit like that. And she made my mother familiar with the idea that there was this boys' club that kids went to in the summer, so my mother would drop us off over there and go to work or whatever during the day and then come pick us up later. And, you know, so we did the boys club thing, and there was a bunch of good memories from there. Those were some good days, good times. So anyway, this Gino's Hamburgers, I can't remember the menu. I can't remember how good or big or whatever the burgers were. They were not very distinctive to me, but it was fast food and I was all in if we were going there. And I know that between that and the fried chicken, I always went in for the burgers and the fries. I know I did. I never got the KFC. I don't even know if my father gave us a choice. My father may have just steered us over to where the cheap burgers were. You know, you could probably get one of those Gino's burgers for like 15 cents in 1972 or whatever the hell it was, you know? So anyway, yeah, so all that. But the Gino's, right? I told you, it come from a couple of guys who played on the Baltimore Colts football team in the 50s. And they were guys of note. I've heard the names before. The Gino guy is Gino Marchetti, right? Gino Marchetti. I can't tell you shit about him. The other guy was a running back, and both of them may be Hall of Famers, right? From the time when I was into sports, from my limited knowledge of ancient football history in the NFL, I am familiar with the name Gino Marchetti. My impression is he was a defender of some sort. I could be wrong. And he played on championship teams. He was probably in what they call the greatest football game ever played. That was the Giants championship game. I was a Giants fan growing up and into my adulthood until I moved out to Texas. And even then, I was a Giants fan for a long time. But the last time I came to Texas, I put an end to that. Became a Cowboys fan. And then all this woke bullshit put an end to that. I am not a sports fan at all anymore. I've given it all up. You can keep that. Anyhow, but I still have, like, room in my mental data banks that needs to be purged and refilled with useful information, but is now currently full of useless information regarding the history of NFL and MLB and NBA and all that shit, you know? Yeah, Gino Marchetti. You want to know about Gino Marchetti? That's why they. That's why God made Wikipedia. Go look it up. I can't even remember the other guy's name who was his partner, but they did a partnership, and I told you about it. Gino's Hamburgers. They had success. They had success. Job well done. Where's my applause button? I don't have one. Wow, you know. I am a custodian. I get custodian things, and that does not involve an applause button for this production, so suck it. Gino. You know, I hear that name Gino, and I automatically think it's Italian for Gene, right? I had an Italian friend growing up named Gene. In sixth grade, he was like one of my best buddies. I had a couple of best buddies in the sixth grade. One of them, you know, died in 2020 of the freaking COVID or COVID-related shit. And that was a sad thing. It was way too young to go. Obviously, he would have been 53 years old, 52, 53 years old. He lived up in New York City with a wife. They went to school together from grade school, you know. The wife was in my fifth grade class, and he was in my sixth grade class. I don't know. We played baseball together. I was on team with all his brothers, and we were buds, but he passed. But this other guy who was my buddy around that time, sixth grade, he's an Italian guy named Gene, you know. It's a small world. I mean, it's a small world. Gene is like the neighbor across the street from my uncle in the same town where we grew up. He didn't get very far. I don't know exactly what he does for a living. He's doing all right to live there. He can't be bad. But I know he started playing guitar at a young age. He's got a twin brother who's a drummer. We kept on, you know, we tried to always talk about, like, making a band and shit like that. And a lot of the guys did. They stuck together. And this guy, I went off on my own tangent with the drugs and everything and ran with a whole different crowd, and I got detached from all that. But, you know, Gene, he stuck with it, and he became a pretty proficient jazz guitar player. You know, I've seen some videos of him and his brother. They got their own little trio band that they jam around, then they play out and everything like that. It's really cool. It's really cool. He's done very well. I remember him and I, he got a big kick. There was this book. It was kind of going around the classroom. It was, and I have no idea what it's about. I have no recollection. I should look it up. What the hell was it called? The grass is always greener on the other side of. It was the grass is always greener over the septic tank, is what it was called by some woman named, if I remember right, Irma Bombeck. Irma Bombeck. And Gene got just all kinds of laughs out of that. I don't know what it was, just something in the book, the style of writing, some of the things that the author said in the writing. He got such a kick out of that. He basically made me have to read it, and I read it, and then we both read it, and then if I remember this correctly, now we're going all the way back to sixth grade, this would be 1978-79, a long time ago, 40 years plus. We had to do a team project book report, right? It had to be like a team project on books that we both read, and we put together, and I don't remember being this creative when I was that young. I had kind of sort of my moments, like I would draw shit, but we invented a board game. The two of us, you know, and like, made the board and the pieces and everything, and I have no idea what the book was about. I have no idea what the gameplay was like. But it was a thing that him and I did as a project together. That was Gene. You know, you had the Gino Marchetti, the Italian Gino, and then, you know, my Italian friend Gene. And then, Eugene, the long form of the name, Eugene. And when I hear that name, right, Eugene, I can't help but think about this weird shit, right? You've heard it before. The whole Nazi thing, the eugenics, eugenicists. You've heard of that. What the hell is that shit, right? The idea is that you improve the human gene pool. There's that gene, right? Eugene, eugenicist. And I'm trying to, like, understand the relation between these words. Maybe there is none. Maybe, like, one is Greek and one is fucking Latin or something. I don't know. Let's see what we got. But, yeah, eugenics involves the improvement of the human gene pool by controlling reproduction. Right? You control reproduction. In other words, you take somebody with this set of characteristics and made it with somebody with a similar set or another desirable set of characteristics, and you create a line of progeny out of those desired characteristics, and then you keep on compounding generation by generation to have a desired result. At the same time, you neglect to allow undesirable characteristics to move into the gene pool. Like a Nazi Germany example, and the Nazi Germans were those who are generally associated with the idea of eugenics, although it predates them significantly. They were actually bringing it into real-time practice, right? So where was I going with that? The Nazis were trying to filter out, like, birth defects, retardation, perhaps, I don't know, maybe dwarfism, whatever defects you might have, like, you know, problems like blindness, spinal issues, whatever the case may be, any kind of quote-unquote weakness in the human gene pool was to be eradicated. They literally sterilized people or killed people just to get them out of society, to make them unable to reproduce anymore, right? And then, you know, in our culture here, we've taken it a step further and really made a science and an art out of human abortions, right? That's a means of controlling, ultimately, population. There's a whole lot, like the origins of the whole abortion movement, if that's what you want to call it, being intentionally targeted at African-American populations to knock down their reproductive development. How fucked up is that? But that's who eugenics is, and that's who eugenicists are. And what the hell does that have to do with Eugene, right? The name Eugene, it's of, oh, here we go, Greek origin, right? It's Greek, and the meaning of Eugene is, here we go, noble aristocrat. What the hell does that have to do with eugenics? Probably nothing, but at the same time, I mean, it's probably two different word origins, but noble aristocrat? Ah, now we're starting to see there's a linkage between the idea of aristocracy and eugenics, right? The aristocracy, well, they're the quote-unquote better people. They are quote-unquote high society. Every time I hear that word, aristocrats, you know what I think of? You wouldn't know what I think of. You'd have no idea. You see me, I walk around, I got my cowboy boots, my cowboy hat. I'm a Texan. Yeah, I got Texas accent. I got Southern accent. I got hillbilly accent. I also got Jersey accent, you know? And see how quick I did that? I just went right through all that shit. Notice how with the Jersey accent, it came to a holler right quick, right? That's when my Jersey tends to come out, when I get pissed. Right, like if I'm driving down West 22 through Union into Springfield, forget about it. I fucking hate driving in traffic. I do not like sharing this world with people on four wheels. They don't know what the fuck they're doing. Anyhow, way beside the point. When I hear the word aristocrat, what comes into my mind, unbeknownst to any of all y'all, is Jim Morrison. Why? Jim Morrison of the Doors. Why? The album, the live album that they did. What the hell is it called? Absolutely Live. There was a song on there. It must be Break On Through. If I remember right, Break On Through 2. It's a long version of it. Break On Through number 2. And in the middle of that, he's kind of making up some lyrics on the way, and I guess that's what makes it 2 instead of the original one. And part of those lyrics says something like, thanks, Hayes and aristocrat. Crap. That's crap. Right? As whenever I see that word aristocrat, I think aristocrat, that's crap. And I do it with Jim Morrison's voice in my head. I don't like aristocrats, okay? I don't mind the idea of like a quote-unquote high society or a governing body. I get a need for class divisions. How we come to it, how we maintain it, is really, really up for debate as far as I'm concerned. I don't think the cream rises to the top. I think somewhere along the way it did. All right? And what determines what's the cream and what's not? Power and money. And influence, right? Power, money, influence. Those are the qualities that set aristocrats apart from the rest of all of us. Has nothing to do with the greater qualities of morality, integrity, character. Has nothing to do with the greater qualities of innovation. It can. I mean, we got like nouveau riche, right? In the world today, you know, when I was, say, like grunge era, go back to the grunge era, there's a lot of names that were not household names back then who are now like the richest people in the world, right? Elon Musk, who the fuck was he? Bill Gates, who the fuck was he? And go down, Steve Jobs, all these guys, you know, the guy who with the Amazon, I forget his name. These were people that came along with the information age and, became sickly wealthy, and they become aristocrats to a degree, you know, by way of their money, which came by way of their innovation. And that is greatness. They deserve to be aristocrats. However, character comes into play. Now, I mentioned the name Bill Gates, and I've been talking about eugenics. Bill Gates, like his father before him, is a eugenicist. And a guy with the power, the money, the influence that dude has, being a eugenicist, is horrifying to me. And now he gets to dictate exactly what is desirable and what is not. I look, you know, the name Eugene is of Greek origin. The meaning of Eugene is noble aristocrat, right? It's not just aristocrat, it's noble aristocrat. Now, there's a version, a definition of noble that means hereditary rank, which basically means aristocrat, but you wouldn't say noble aristocrat redundantly, you know? You would have to use another definition of noble, and here it is. Having qualities of high moral character, all right? Now we get into some shit. I don't know. if I can explain this quickly and concisely, it could get deep really quick, but they get into morals, right? High moral character, and character for that matter, you know, but character, probably gonna have to leave to another discussion, but I could tell you right now, dictionary definition, character, moral strength, integrity, okay? Dictionary definition of noble, having qualities of high moral character. So, you know, I see morals and ethics as similar with a unique difference, right? I can define ethics. How do you define ethics? Concern with the judgment of right and wrong in human character and behavior. It's literally the same word by definition, but by my understanding of it, there's a difference between moral and ethic, right? Wait a minute. No, that's the definition of morals, concerning the judgment of right and wrong in human character and behavior. Ethics is the standards governing a person's conduct, all right? Again, they're right on the same lines, but there is a difference, all right? Standards, like, to me, a moral, I'm just going to cut to the chase and make it plain. To me, a moral is a standard set by God Almighty, the creator of all things, right? Which gives us a singular point of assimilation that we all share in the same definition of what morals are by that approach. Ethics, on the other hand, you could take one of God's morals. Say, thou shalt not kill, right? Morally, if you're a moral person, you would not kill. Ethically, however, if you had a job that you would lose if you killed somebody, you wouldn't be you wouldn't be prevented from killing somebody by God's edict. You would be prevented to save your own skin, right? You don't want to go to jail. You don't want to lose your job. So it's really a human standard, and that's what I'm getting to. Ethics, morals, pretty much the same thing. In my opinion, one is a spiritual, has a spiritual element to it. The other one has a completely human element to it. Ethics are what the atheist would have. Morals is what a Christian would have. You could say morals is what anybody who believes in any kind of God would have, if they get morals that come from that God or set of gods, you know, the monotheistic, polytheistic, whatever. That could be said. Having, in so much as it has a spiritual connotation to it, right? Anyway, so you get these morals, and I find morals, you know, concerned with the judgment of right and wrong, right? In human character and behavior. And now who decides that? This is where we get into some real serious shit here, right? Who decides right and wrong? Like I just said, you could have, like, we'll put the atheists and humanists aside. Let them be in the ethics side of things for now. Morally, with a spiritual basis, well, we've got so many bases of faith, right? Christianity, Islam, Shintoism, Judaism, the Hinduisms, Buddhism's more of a humanism stuff. Whatever you can come up with. All the native tribal religions and practices. The world is full of spiritual perspective and approach. And with that one singular point, then we just have this variety, right? You've got Christian morals, you've got Muslim morals, and you've got Hindu morals. So you don't really have this commonality. And the result of that is people believe different things, and the result of that is ultimately going to be conflict. And this is where the wars come from. People blame religion on wars so often, especially in the more distant past. Not so much now, but I guess there's element of it now still to this day. Yeah, but historically speaking, you've had those clashes, you know. And the differences in beliefs. It would be nice if we can all get under one Creator God and share the same morality, but that's not the way of the world. And I'll someday get into utopianism, but I think just from that much right there, you could see how impossible that would be. Utopia is impossible because of the different brands of morality, and then ethics on its own, you know. There's a million forms of ethics. No, you get your ethics from the company you work for, from the municipal laws, the civic laws in your community, the federal laws, you know, national laws of the land. You get your ethics, you know, when you're dating. You know, think about it. When you're dating some chick. In the process of dating, you exchange with each other rules for play. You have your ways, she has her ways, and you find out each other. And she, you know, I know every time, whoever I've ever dated in my life, in the process, they're laying down their law on me. And I got to decide if I can accept that and swim with that. And it goes vice versa, too. I have my rules that I lay on her. We may not be very conscious of this. This may be just, it happens naturally, or it happens with intent. You know, when you date enough, you start doing this thing with intent. There's some shit that you want to know quick and you don't want to waste your time. I got to be like that after a while, right? But yeah, so who gets to decide right and wrong? So we're all fucked up because ultimately that answer is we all get to decide. So there's all kinds of variation of both morals and ethics. Who gets to decide what's moral and what isn't? My answer to you for today is another Baltimore cult. Quarterback Earl Morrill. Yes, Earl Morrill. Famous for Super Bowl appearances with the Baltimore Colts in the late 60s and with the Miami Dolphins in the early 70s. Quarterback Earl Morrill. Because I don't know if he ever played on the team with Gino Marchetti. I'm going to say probably not. They were probably too far apart in time. But maybe, who the fuck knows? I don't know. So ethics, like I said, the standards governing a person's conduct, that could be without consideration of morals at all. You know, a killer won't kill. An atheist killer won't kill to prevent himself from going to jail or from losing his job or something like that. You understand what I'm saying, you know? And then, you know, also, one more other thing about Route 22. Because forget about it. Route 22. My mother lived in a neighborhood across the street from a Johnson & Johnson subsidiary called Ethicon, right? Actually, I stayed there with her when I was going through divorce in my first marriage. So, yeah, Ethicon, ethics, morality, Earl Morrill, Gino Marchetti, Gino's Hamburgers, Union, New Jersey. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you enjoyed this Monologics.
Thank you for tuning into Post-Arlen Monologics. Please understand that this project is meant to be part of a long-term archive as a series of snapshots reflecting a distant past. We are not seeking advertisers, but may at times accept private anonymous donations to help mitigate production costs. Further information involving this project and archived releases of Post-Arlen Monologics can be accessed over the World Wide Web at postarlen.com and at onsert.com. Comments, critiques, and inquiries may be submitted to Maverick through email at maverick88@postarlen.com.